What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Hardcore Troubadour. My name is Brian Wallace.
My name is Tyler Short, and dude, I'm so tired.
Tell us why, Tyler.
Two shows in a row this weekend, and like I just told you, that was the 11th one of the month. There's about to be 12
Yeah.
on Thursday because I guess I'm gonna go to fucking Bayway.
Okay.
I don't even really
What do you
care
say?
to
Like,
see Bayway, but
I'm like, yeah, I
I'm
mean,
gonna go.
I wouldn't go out of my way for that, but
It's happening
no
here. I feel
offense to
like I
anyone.
should show face.
Yeah. Well, respect for that.
But I have started moshing again.
That was
We'll
a little prematurely, huh?
definitely. I'm not cleared to return to sports activity for 2 more months, but I got
Yeah.
through the Killing Time set last night and I'm just feeling okay now.
So let's talk. Well, I'm glad you're feeling okay. So let's go most recent. So last night was GB Killing Time.
Dude, it was fucking magnificent.
Hell yeah.
It was I was texting our friend Tom earlier about it. Anthony fucked up Telltale in a way that I have similarly fucked up Telltale, because it doesn't make sense vocally for the way the music transitions to have
Yes.
to return to verses kind of out of order. He did the same thing I've done playing that song live in an old band. And then they were all heckled into playing it again.
Heckled into playing it
And they
again.
did. And
That's so sick.
it was awesome. Isaac just yelled, "Just do it again." And they were like, "Play the song again." He went, "Why not?"
Dude,
And
that
they
fucking
did.
rules.
And it was cool. And it was, and they, well, they opened with it, fucked the song up. And it's like,
Oh, yeah.
and then they just rocked it, and then the rest of the set was awesome.
Dude, that rules. Also, like, I feel like now that we're talking about Killing Time, is a perfect time. Did you hear that fucking chime, man?
No.
Good, because it was really loud in my ear. Like somebody sent me an iMessage, and that usually doesn't happen. Anyway, now that we're talking about Killing Time, this is time for me to confess that pretty much in my head, at all times, all waking hours of the day, I'll just hear dun 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 dun. Like, I don't, it's like
That's your
permanently
inner
tattooed.
monologue.
Yeah,
That's your theme music.
that. Yes.
That's good.
Fools die. But yeah, it just that beat goes nonstop, and I've been carrying this for, probably the last, I don't know, 25 years. And
That's awesome. Just living rent-free in your head all the time.
And it, I thought, like, I remember one of the first times I saw them, actually, and it wasn't in New York. One of the first times I saw them was at Burning Fight in Chicago,
Oh shit.
which was at 09, I think it
Yeah.
was. And I was like, oh, good. Maybe fucking watching this live and going off to it will get it out of my system. And it only made it worse.
An
And
infection.
yeah,
I hope
and.
you're. Oh, what if you're passing it on to somebody right now, like The Ring or It Follows or something? Now
Good.
they will carry this fool's die beat in
Yeah.
their brain. That would be wonderful. I would
Oh
be happy
yeah.
to. I would be happy if this freed you of it by what is it? There's like the. I mean, it is It Follows. It's you got to
Yeah.
keep passing it on
Well,
to somebody else and.
and I think at one point I told so Drew, who's the bass player for Perfect World, good, and my good friend, is good friends with Carl from Killing Time.
Which one's
And
Carl's?
Carl
He the.
Porcaro, one of the guitar players.
Guitar players, okay.
He shared guitar duties with Rich before Rich passed away.
Gotcha.
And I'm so they play with a second guitar player again now, right?
Nope.
No,
They play as a four
so
piece.
it's just Carl. So Carl is the only guitar player now, but like he introduced us at a show a while back, and I was doing my like he's like super chill, down to earth dude, and I'm like, this is Carl from Raw Deal and Killing Time. I'm like, he's like hanging with me, talking to me. And then I was like, I probably shouldn't mention that my weird relationship with his riffs with him.
That it's stuck in my head right now
Yeah.
while I'm talking to him.
But then I did, and he laughed really hard. Like
That's awesome.
he thought it was funny.
They
So
seem like great sports.
yeah, for sure.
Anthony could not believe that two witnesses played with three guitars. That was one of his banter was, can
Lynyrd
you
Skynyrd.
imagine if there were three people up here trying to play these stupid songs at the
That's awesome.
time? He was like, it'd be a fucking mess. But yeah, no, it was awesome. All the bands got a great reaction. It was cool to see By the Grace of God get, like, I don't know, like fun love and not just like a bunch of crossed-armed old guys who are,
Yes.
afraid to act embarrassing. Me and Mo were being so embarrassing. It was a good time.
That's
We
great.
were I spun some kicks during By the Grace of God, which I never thought I would ever get to do in my life, because
Yeah,
they're
you
just
did.
one of those bands that people don't typically do that for. But there was a little like teenager moshing to his heart's content the entire time By the Grace of God was playing. The son of a member of Crane, if you've ever heard of that
No shit.
Louisville band.
Numb.
Dude, it's fucked up. All these guys who are like part of like hardcore like pillars in Louisville now have like children who are like old enough to play in bands.
Yeah.
And
I
it's
mean,
like our scene just now is that old, I guess, that
multi-generational.
it's starting to reproduce itself literally.
Yeah.
Which
It's
is
like, yeah, it's fucking awesome.
yeah, no, very cool. I did during Killing Time. There's a local band from Cincy called Flat Six. If you've heard their demo, they're
I
on
have not.
DGR.
Okay.
They're my preferred car themed hardcore band right now.
Oh. So we've got a car-themed band and a truck-themed band from California.
Yes, there's
Okay.
also another car themed band that I saw this week called Totaled
Oh
from
shit.
Springfield. I think their demo is called Seven Song Pileup, which is an incredible name for a demo. It's fucking awesome. God, dude, so much gig stories. But anyway, so Flat Six, they opened the pre-show for the fest, and they also played that Distorted Mess Fest that we went to in Lexington that Walk Alone played.
Yeah.
And they cover Backtrack by Killing Time, and a couple of them were at the gig, and by the time they said this is our last song, it was very clear that the only song they had left to play was Backtrack, and those kids were just moshing immediately so hard. I was like, oh, this is so special.
That rules.
They played this song. The last time I saw this song, they played it.
That and you know what? That is a it is a that's a frequently covered song, but that like never get sick of, you
No.
know. I in my two appearances with The Wrong Side, we covered Backtrack as well, and I was playing bass, and so it's just something I remember too. In addition to that always being one of my favorite songs, it's a very satisfying song to play on bass because that dum 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 dum, it's like it's fun to play because it feels like you're really like controlling the riff
The song,
and getting
yeah.
everybody like riled up and ready to go.
More or less every Killing Time song seems like it's pretty fun to play.
Yeah, I mean,
Looks fun too.
riffs on riffs, and it's so cool too that Anthony, like, you know, the voice hasn't lost a fucking beat,
Not a bit.
not a bit. I mean, and that, you know, he's a very entertaining front man,
Although
but
he
if
did
you
say he's going to get on Ozempic, and then he said he's going to learn how to actually sing. That was part of his banter was he was talking about Gorilla Biscuits and how
Look,
Siv can actually sing.
as long as he keeps wearing the fucking Sopranos Goomba
Yes.
shirts everywhere, like that's fine with me.
Yes.
May like you know he's done some he's just had a very fascinating life both inside and outside of hardcore.
I don't know anything about the guy except
Like
for
I don't want to speak out of pocket, but this is stuff that I've like overheard him like sharing with people and that I know. Like he got into like commodities trading and made a lot of money like doing that, and but stayed in hardcore the whole time, you know. So he's navigated both, you know, the sort of both sides of the fucking city that never sleeps, you know what I mean?
The underworld and the overworld.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you think about like it's just funny to think about like the shit that they would sing about, like you know, or like Cheap Thrills starts, you know what I mean? And it's like
Yeah.
your like rough ass New York City song, and then you know, so he could rule that at night and then make money off of these suited up fuckers during the day.
Man,
So
that's so funny. I didn't know that Mark Porter was into that kind of shit too.
yes,
I didn't realize that until I listened to like a long interview with them. I'm curious if it's in the Floor Punch book at all. I've not cracked mine open yet.
I've not read that either, but it might be. I think it's part of the lore, part of the story. But yeah, fuck
Dude,
yeah.
I will b before we move on from the Grill Biscuits show, GB was so fun and so many young kids were going off for GB that I just assumed only liked shit like Knocked Loose.
That's awesome to see
And it
them
was
going off for
really special.
GB.
And not just shit like Knocked Loose, like but like so many kids that I would assume like like they're fucking with slam stuff and that's really like
Right.
that's where they're at right now. And they were diving and singing along to GB. Seth, the guitar player from Gates to Hell, apparently singing along every single word on the side of the stage for Grill Biscuits. I had no idea that was like one of their favorite bands.
That rules. And
Incredible.
it always just makes sense, right? Like you'll find out shit like that later. And even if the band that they play in doesn't sound anything like GB or like have an aesthetic like that, it's sort of like, oh, you wouldn't be able to make shit as cool as you do if you
If
didn't
you didn't like
understand all
everything.
this too.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah, no,
exactly.
and it's just a nice surprise too. They did Warzone, and a bunch of people knew it that I would just would have assumed are far too young to even have cared enough to look that far back. And it was just really sweet. It was nice. I'm surprised I didn't cry after the damn show. Talked to Arthur for a really long time. Me and
Yeah.
Ashton like sat with him for like about an hour at the bar after the show, and we're chatting about life and socialist views and stuff. And really nice guy, really cool guy.
Great dude.
I didn't know of all the people in that band, I didn't know that that would be the one I would connect with the hardest and feel like I wasn't punishing and actually wanted to talk to me.
Why did you think that? Because he's so well dressed.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. He just seems like he seems way too way too cool to slum it with a bunch of morons.
I mean, that's what's great about all the, like, just having been in New York for as long as I have, I'm like, I wouldn't call myself friends with any of those dudes, right? But I've had enough interactions with Arthur, with Walter, with Civ, and every time they are so cool and kind to me, even though I'm just some other, rando punishing them about something or just who happens to be around with the person that they really are talking to. You know what I mean? And it just makes me happy when, like, shit that, I loved your shit before I even knew you. And now that I met you, I love it more. You
Yeah,
know what I mean?
I still think I think I wig Civ out. I've talked to him twice now, and they covered Civ last night as well. They played Do Something, and me and Jim Baron kind of lost our minds for a second. And I think I hit Civ in the head pretty hard because I grabbed him while I was singing along. Oops. But I talked to Walter, and I shared with him that me and my dad came to see Quicksand when they played Louisville together because I got him Slip and Manic Compression for Christmas like a couple years ago, and he thought that was pretty cool.
I bet he did.
Me and him and Rob Pennington were all talking about like our fathers and them being somewhat interested in the things we're doing.
And that rules, but I gotta say, like, your dad can't be that much older than Walter, can he?
I mean, no, yeah, my dad's like 75.
Oh, I didn't realize your dad was that old.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, never mind then.
Yeah, my dad was like around my age when I was born.
I see.
So
Yeah, my
he would be
parents.
twice as old as me.
My parents were far too young, and it showed in my experiences. Yeah, I'll just leave it there. Children of children, as Jason Isbell wrote about. That rules. Well, any, I mean, we can't go like through all of them piece by piece, but let's talk about any other highlights of the gigs you've been at or been involved with? We saw one of the same tours, I know. The
Yes, we
big
did.
Obituary Terror and
Did you
Nails
stay
tour.
through Obituary?
I did.
Damn, I couldn't make it.
I mean, when daddy gets a night out, he's gotta make the
Gotta make
most
the
of it.
most of
You know
it.
what I
I
mean?
feel you.
So yeah. But I could have, their set definitely could have been shorter.
My ears and head were rocked after Nails.
Yeah. Oh, and it for sure too. In New York, they played at the Knockdown Center, which is a cool venue, but it's basically a warehouse. Does not have the best acoustics. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So like, yeah, a lot of the bands, but especially Nails, you know, they were sick, but the way the sound would like reverberated off the roof and
Yeah.
everywhere, like, yeah, it was a bit much.
And they were playing on a full stacks too.
Oh, hell yeah,
I
of
did
course.
notice that shit and I was like, oh, I haven't seen that in a minute.
It's just, it is funny, like so many bands are being like, let's downsize and go digital so we don't have to carry so much shit around with us. They're like, fuck it.
It.
12 gun.
Load
This is like AC/DC.
was there I'm assuming Barricade for that show?
Yeah.
Was Scott Vogel calling for the reverse stage dive?
Yes.
I love it.
I mean, yeah. I think he's, you know, for better or worse, he's had so much experience with that now because Terror has played so many huge tours and shows.
Part of his banter in Louisville was to put the security guys to work.
I like that.
He kept saying, "These guys are getting lazy. Put them to work."
That rules, man.
Like, "Make them earn their check tonight."
I love it.
It's pretty funny. Oh, it was very good. Yeah, no, that show was cool. Was how was the crowd for Obituary? Was it
I
what you'd
mean,
imagine it would be?
yeah. I mean, it was the biggest place I've seen them play in New York. The last time I saw them, they played Vitus, you know, which is
Okay.
no longer open, but like they did two nights there and sold them both out. But that made sense because, you know, there was like a 300 cap room. This place is huge. I don't even want to. I'm terrible at guessing these kind of things, but Knockdown Center is one of the largest venues. Like it's where Alkaline Trio played last time they
Okay.
came. So it's a good, you know, 2,500. It's a very, very large room.
Gotcha. I think I've heard Tom talk about it. Wasn't it like a old like industrial warehouse or
Yeah, it
whatever?
was a warehouse. And I
Yeah.
mean, so it's a killer space. Like it, I love the way it looks. I love that there's, you know, it can feel intimate if you're up front, but if you're just want to like, if there's a band you just kind of want to watch, you can be a little far away but still see really well. You know what I mean? That kind of shit. So it's great, but like any room like that, it's always so hard to get the sound right.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're just not made for big speakers and shit like that. The other thing that so the crowd, you asked about the crowd at, yeah, it was like, I didn't notice anything in particular. It was like your typical mix of metal dudes and hardcore kids and.
There was only really like one guy being super annoying during Spirit World,
Oh, interesting.
and then he was back out there seemingly attempting to maybe be annoying during Nails, but then he just got the crap beat out of him
Yeah.
and kind of chilled out.
Well, the thing that happened, you know, New York crowds as of late, and I know this can vary place to place, but they're not like the most aggressive crowds. I mean, you've seen it. It's
Yeah.
like the most of the metal dudes there were like, I want to drink a beer, metal dudes, and not trying to mosh or like get
Oh,
down
kids
or
were
anything like
killing
that.
each other during Nails.
I mean, good.
It
But I
was
feel
tight.
like the kids killing each other that I witnessed were like most like kids that knew what they were doing. They were like hardcore kids that
Oh
like, you
yeah.
know, instead of just like, you know,
Well, that was my shocker was, and I think that tour is very much intelligent for Obituary to bring out like kids who like if bringing Nails on that tour, I think is a really smart move
Oh,
and
hell yeah.
very opportune for Nails too to like
Yeah.
reconnect with hardcore kids who are like, wait, Terror and Nails? I can't miss this.
Exactly. And I mean, I think too, you know, it's been true for a lot of like hardcore and metalcore kids with Obituary. It's like even if you don't end up loving them, like you start to recognize like, oh, this is where these riffs came from. Like they were playing this riff in 1990, and then, you know, it gets recycled here, and here.
Yeah.
And now it's in, you know, these bands that you love doing it. Like, you know, I remember always being struck, you know, because especially because like that's a band where like I heard and got into all the bands influenced by them before I actually heard Obituary. And I think that's the experience of a lot of hardcore kids our age.
Cruel Hand covering Redneck Stomp. That was me. That was
Okay, yeah,
my
exactly. That's
obituary.
a great example. But to realize too that on, you know, on Cause of Death, on a lot of the other earlier records, they did tempo changes in a way that was much more like, because you compare them to other, like, quote, death metal bands of the time, like a Morbid Angel or shit like that. And Obituary's tempo changes feel so much more moshy and like connected to hardcore rather than just like, let's go as fast as possible, let's go as slow as possible, which is more of like what Morbid Angel and shit like that is. So,
Yeah, no, it's more for me. That stuff doesn't
It,
hit me.
they are for sure the, yeah, they're the death metal band that
For
hardcore kids
moshers.
can fuck with because they're moshers. Exactly. Like they wrote mosh riffs, not just like extreme riffs, like actual mosh riffs, you know? So that was sick. I mean, I'll just throw it out there too. The other show that I went to was Sam I Am Iron Cheek, which I was, you know, joking with you, Tyler, and all my
You're going to
friends.
go
I was
cry
like,
with a bunch of
yeah,
40-year-olds.
it was a safe space for 40-year-old men to cry. And I didn't actually cry, but like I could have, you know what I mean? And
And
it's
it would have
just,
been fine.
it would have been fine. I mean, it was great. The crowd was what you'd expect, you know what I mean? It was mostly old, but because of, you don't feel that like at a hardcore show when it's an old crowd, you're like, ugh, you know what I mean? But there it was like, oh, we're just going to pack in tight and sing along because that's all that you were going to do anyway. And didn't disappoint in
That's
that.
awesome.
I, you know, I'm just glad I didn't get beer spilled on me because that's usually the risk at
I
shit
was gonna
like
say, I mean, I
that.
can't recall a. I mean, I never got. I still haven't gotten to see Iron Sheik, but I saw Ladderman a bunch and always got something spilled on me,
Yeah, it's.
or at least the, like the smelliest person there got on me at some point.
And like that, yeah, a random smelly bearded good-natured punk would like hug me and I'd be
Oh,
like,
how many beards?
I'm glad you're being nice, but like I don't really know you like
How
that.
many beards at that show?
I mean,
All of
yeah, I would say everyone that was capable of having one probably did.
Fantastic.
But it's also, it was interesting, like, because the thing about Iron Cheek, they are truly one of my favorite bands and their songs really sound the same. They found a formula and they fucking stick to it. And it's like, I call it like the Long Island emo train. You know what I mean? Because it's not like emo, but it's the fucking like, I'm gonna sing like this. And then like everybody, like you can't help but just like, he's like, I got a good fucking line and I'm about to throw it out there and everybody's gonna pick up what I'm putting down. And that rules. My old punk band Thirsty played Iron Cheek's first show.
Really?
So they played before us. It was like our like EP release.
That's
And I
crazy.
remember being, you know, they were like known dudes, right? Because of Ladderman and stuff, but it was their like as Iron Cheek, their first show. And I remember immediately being like, fuck, I don't want to play after this. They were so good. Cause also it was like in Lindenhurst, Long Island, and it was very much their crowd. You know what I mean? Like, but one of my favorite bands. I'm so glad that I got to go. I hadn't seen them in, I think, since before the pandemic.
That's awesome. I would love to get to see them at some point because I didn't listen to them for a very long time because they never toured through here. And also, like, honestly, I hate that band name so much.
It's a bad, and you know, a lot of their song titles too have the like, you know, obnoxious punk rock tongue in cheek, like name. Yeah, it'll be like, this is a good song, but I would have never listened to it before because it's called Cutesy Monster Man or My Best Friend is a Nihilist. And then you like listen to it and it's like the lyrics are like incredible, but you know, it's like half of it's like comic book references that I don't
The
get.
funny thing though is like I think Ladderman has some of the best song titles. And they're all very there's a fine line with that. It's like Ladderman's really good at it, Dillinger Four is really good at it, and then there's a fine line between like, oh, now we're like in like I don't know, like Daggermouth territory and
Yeah, I know. It's like a little too much time. It starts to feel like you're, you know, on an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Yes. You need to like Wikipedia open while you're
I'm like, I'll just go like, I'm assuming that's some fucking comic book reference that I don't understand, but I like the song, so
Yeah, I love inside jokes. I hope to be a part of one someday.
Yeah. Oh, and then so I would like ask I think my buddy Chris all the time about this. I'd like ask him about it and he'd be the one who would know. And then he'd be like, "Oh yeah, you should check out that series." And I'd be like, D I'm definitely not. But
I asked you.
thank you.
This is why I asked you because
He's
I
like,
don't care.
No, I'm not going to be purchasing that graphic novel, but thank you for explaining it to me.
That's so funny. That's like hanging out with Dave Bogart from Weapon X.
Yeah.
He'll start explaining something to me and everyone else will tune out and I'm like, I'll lock in because I'm like, I want him to tell me so then I never have to find out any other way.
Yeah, exactly.
We were we went out to get Korean chicken with a couple of the guys from Apex Predators. They were picking up a van. So we went out to eat with them before going to the show last night, and Casey from Apex was telling some story about some new anime and said it's the first polycule anime. And then Dave corrected him on a different anime. And I looked at Dave and I said, this is not the W you think
Actually,
it was. I was like, Dave, you could have said nothing, man.
I know, just be like, I don't know what you're talking about, man.
Yeah, nobody asked you to out yourself with this right now. Oh, it was
Dude,
awesome.
that rules.
Oh, very good.
I tried, you know what I'm saying? Like with anime and comic books and shit, I actually like I read some of the things that people were like, you gotta do this. Like my dislike for it is not because it's like nerdy. It's just like I just not for me. I couldn't get into it.
I understood Akira. I understood the draw for that. I understood Princess Mononoke. I've never watched any of those other Studio Ghibli things really, but I bet I would maybe get some, but I just don't. Who has the time?
Why do I have this?
Brian is holding up his copy of Princess
I
Mononoke. Is that
mean,
a graphic novel or a
let's find out. Yes, it is a graphic novel. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is, at some point, somebody was like, you should read this. And I saw it for cheap and I was like, okay, cool.
And then
And
it's that.
I made it like 4 pages in and I'm like, oh, this hurts my head to like look at these pictures and read the dialogue or try to figure. I mean, there's many of the pages, there's nothing on. And like, I realized, like, I'm not actually good at like,
Deciphering a
gleaning,
story
yeah.
by visuals.
I'm straight up like, who's that? What's going on here?
Oh, dude, that's awesome. You're like my mom watching a movie with me, going, "What's that actress? What are they
Exactly.
from?" I'm like, we're in the movie theater, Mom. Ask me later, please. For the love of God.
Oh, which I mean, one more thing, you'll be proud of me because it happens so rarely. Went to the movies
Oh, yeah.
by myself in the middle of the day because that's unemployed man life. Saw Friendship.
Oh, dude, how is it?
It was great. I mean, without spoiling anything, you would think from the trailer, oh, is this just like a long I think you should leave sketch? And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Except, but it's that,
Oh.
but darker.
Yeah.
Like, and Paul Rudd is phenomenal. Like Tim's great, but Tim acts exactly like you would expect him to
Yes.
act. You know what I mean? The way that Paul Rudd played off of him, though, was hilarious. Like
Dude, it seems so sinister.
it is, yeah, it's low key dark. Like, you know, it'll take something that would be like, oh, this could have been a scene out of an I think you should leave sketch, and then we'll introduce some like real dark shit into it. But I think that's what made it good. I
That's
really
fucking
enjoyed it.
dope.
Yeah, worth seeing
I
for
love
sure.
that you went and saw Friendship by yourself.
Dude, and went there's a brief Connor O'Malley cameo. Like, I can't give away much because like he's not in it for very long. But like his
I think he's in the preview, so I did know he was in it. Yeah.
But when he comes in, like the scenario where he appears is, you know, absurd. And I like in a middle of the weekday movie theater, maybe six people in it. I like audibly cheered when Connor O'Malley came on.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, this is what my life has become. I was like, yes, when he shows up.
That's so
Like
tight.
this woman down the row is like looking at me, and I'm just like,
That's so tight. You have to like turn like who said that?
who said that?
That's fucking awesome. That rocks.
it's worth seeing for sure. And it's one, you know, you don't have to see it in the theater, but
Yeah,
it is worth seeing.
we definitely both really want to see it because we binged Detroiters a few months ago, and yeah, just need more Tim Robinson for
I mean,
sure.
my God, Detroiters is so good.
It's incredible.
I always think about the line. I'm like doing all the things you shouldn't do while you're recording your voice. What the fuck is wrong with me?
Pretty cool.
Dude, I'm falling apart. I'm 2 months unemployed and it's like showing. like the scene in Detroit, Conor O'Malley's part in Detroiters, where he's like a relative and he's like, come get
Yeah.
your stuff. Just like, you don't need your Slipknot mask. I need my Slipknot mask.
He plays Tim's brother, doesn't he? Yeah,
Yeah.
that's yeah, dude, he's fucking awesome. Oh, his loser brother who is like who they act like is better equipped for life than
Yeah,
Tim is.
it's incredible.
Pretty good.
It's fun shooting the shit. I feel like part of the reason we're going long on this is because we're avoiding the topic at hand.
Yeah, I keep like looking at this picture of Justin laying in Steve's lap,
Oh my God.
laughing, and it is it's upsetting. I
Well,
know this is gonna really bum me out to read this because I've kind of skimmed, I've skimmed the thing Steve wrote for this record, and it's not gonna be fun.
yeah. Well, as you all know from
Yeah.
clicking in or seeing the cover, we're going to be talking about JT, the Steve Earle record, which is a tribute to his son who passed away
Tragically.
unexpectedly and tragically in 2020. So yeah, let's get into it, man.
Yeah, let's get into it. I'll just go ahead and read. I think I'm trying to remember. Is this the all the usual suspects, I believe, are on this record, recorded by Ray Kennedy again? Yeah, everybody, the Mastersons are still playing. But that, you know, the bass player had already passed at this point too, so
Yeah.
cover art by Tony Fitzpatrick. So yeah, everybody who's alive is still here for this one, which is, man. Yeah. So I'll go ahead and I'll get into reading what oh dude, Steve's wearing my favorite Justin Townes Earl design
Oh, it's so
on the
sick.
back
It's a
cover. The
baseball shirt.
baseball design.
Yeah.
That is like the shirt I wish I could find in XL, but every time I see it on Depop, it's like a goddamn medium. But yeah, we'll read what Steve wrote for this record. He wrote, "Justin Townes Earl left this world a little over a mile from where he came in, having seen more of it than most of folks in his 38 years before his all too short arc brought him right back to where he started from, Nashville, Tennessee. The evening Justin was born, in what was then called Baptist Hospital, his mother, Carol, exhausted after 36 hours in labor, fell immediately into a deep sleep, and I was left staring into the eyes of my firstborn son. After a while, a nurse kindly asked if I would like to carry him to the nursery myself. I don't know how I ever negotiated the walk down the hall without tripping over my own 2 feet. I couldn't take my eyes off him, and he looked right back at me, hardly blinking, as if to say, 'I know you.' After a bit of a gentle tug of war at the nursery door, I reluctantly relinquished custody to the nurse. My arms had never felt so empty. Suddenly, it occurred to me that I hadn't spoken to any of my family back in Texas since I'd phoned early in the day before to let them know that Carol was in labor and we were headed to the hospital. I beelined for the payphones in the waiting room and was relieved to find a quarter in my pocket. Not a given at that point in my career. I dropped it in the slot and dialed my parents' number in Houston. My dad answered, and immediately upon hearing his voice, I burst into tears and apologized for every shitty thing I'd ever said or done to him, which was a litany. Carol and I split up when Justin was 3, and he shuttled between our households, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes not, until he left home. That event occurred pretty organically when he accompanied me on a teaching sabbatical to the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago. Justin was playing by that time, having gone from post-mortem Nirvana fan to acoustic blues practitioner by way of Kurt Cobain's Where Did You Sleep Last Night? He'd only been interested in electric guitar until seeing Cobain hunched over the Big Martin acoustic on MTV Unplugged, so I pointed him towards the original recorded version in my record collection. Lead Belly was right next to Lightnin' Hopkins, and Lightning next to Mance Lipscomb. And next thing I knew, he was playing the stuff I'd been trying to sort out for years. The original idea of Justin going to Chicago, besides just keeping an eye on him, was that he would take a few classes at the Old Town School, but within a few weeks he was teaching the fingerstyle guitar. By the time I completed my 8-week course and returned home, Justin had turned 18 and elected to remain behind. He was back in Nashville 6 months later. Musically, things had begun to develop rapidly. A jug band, a rock band, a short stint as a Duke. But lo and behold, he'd begun to come up with his own songs, and they were really fucking good. He would release 8 full-length albums and EP over 13 years, which our paths crossed infrequently, usually on the road. Ironically, we both set out the last summer of his life in Tennessee, grounded by a pandemic, unable to escape to the only place either of us ever felt at home, the highway. We spoke often those last few months, saw each other a handful of times, and I talked to him the night he died. I'm grateful for that. This record is called JT because he was never called anything else until he was nearly grown. Well, when he was little, I called him Cowboy. For better or worse, right or wrong, I love Justin Townsend more than anything else on this earth. That being said, I made this record like every other record I've ever made for me. It was the only way I knew to say goodbye. See you when I get there, Cowboy. Dad. I am upset
Yeah.
right
It's
now.
very upsetting, man. It's just hard to imagine, man,
Yeah.
the grief and I just I appreciate what Steve said.
Me
This is
too.
for me. Like I did this was how I could sort of, process the unfathomable. You know what I mean? Of losing a child. And I think there's got to be something too, just about fucking losing a child to the thing that you battled
Yeah.
for so long.
And tried to keep him safe from, but didn't set an amazing example of how to do that. I do love one thing he writes in this, which I guess I hadn't read this whole thing before, but the next thing I knew, he was playing stuff I've been trying to sort out for years, and this just makes me feel something because of like part of my relationship with my father right now is like bonding over Steve Earle's music. And my dad recently, he didn't know we were talking about this or anything. He walks up to me while I'm at work the other day, and I'm stocking ice cream, and he's like, "You know what I've been like looking up online a lot lately?" And I was like, "What?" Because I'm immediately just I want to hear everything he's got to say to me about everything. We've completely flipped. Where like my dad used to want to hear about my day, now all I want to hear him is him tell me stuff. Which when I was younger, I didn't want to hear him tell me anything. And he's like, "You know, I've been watching on YouTube a lot." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "Justin Townes Earl." And I'm like, "Oh, dude, we're about to talk about the covers record that Steve did for that." And he goes, "Yeah, man, he was a hell of a guitar player." He was like, he's like, he's one of the best guitar players I've ever seen.
100%.
And like, yeah, I don't know. Like because this stuff, we've talked about this before. I think guitar is wizard shit. It's magic. It's there's no technique or anything. It's all just magic, and it comes and the sound comes out. But my dad actually understands how it works to a certain extent and can like recognize the massive talent that Justin had. And because he was well, he's a much better guitar player than Steve Earle.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's, Steve readily admits as much, right? Because like that's Steve's a songwriter. And when he, whether it's guitar or mandolin or whatever, he masters it to the extent that he needs to
He
get
needs
out the
to.
song. Whereas Justin is a fucking virtuoso, right? I also, it tracks because me and Justin were nearly the same. We were born the same year. He was, several months older than me, but we were both born the same year, so subject to a lot of the same influences. Like it cannot be overstated. So I think we would have been both 12 years old when Nirvana Unplugged came out.
Oh, yeah.
It changed everything. Like I literally same, because like all I had cared about previously to then was electric guitar. And I think if I hadn't, Nirvana Unplugged made me interested in songwriters more, and like in an acoustic shit. And so I can, probably fast forward to if I hadn't had the influence of, Nirvana Unplugged, I probably wouldn't have been as receptive to Steve and to Bob Dylan and to some of the other things that I got so into. 'Cause like, in addition to it just being a phenomenal performance for our weird little generation, which was on the cusp of Gen X and millennial, like he that's what made acoustic guitar cool.
That's so funny to hear because I kind of got it in the reverse where Nirvana Unplugged appealed to my parents.
Oh, interesting.
So I heard Nirvana because they got the Unplugged CD. And that was the first Nirvana I heard, other than hearing some of it on the radio, just not knowing what it was really. And then hearing them listen to the Nirvana Unplugged, like that was my intro to Nirvana being like available to me, because they didn't have, they didn't have Bleach, they didn't have any of those CDs, but they got that CD because they saw it on TV and they were like, well, let's have this to listen to on the stereo.
Dude, so cool. And like I said, the closing with the Leadbelly song, which is just a super haunting track. But I'm thinking about too, like who he was, that record was responsible for a brief resurgence in the career of the Meat Puppets because of their like appearance on there. Just super cool. So like that, it tracks, but like I'd never actually heard that before, like how much of that, like, oh, it was after seeing Kurt Cobain on Nirvana Unplugged that now JT wanted to fuck with my shit.
My shit,
Like,
yeah.
and that's like,
The stuff I've been trying to get him into, yeah.
which is
I mean,
so
no,
awesome.
dude, I got my haircut by Steve Sindone from Breathe Resists and whatnot the other day, and he was talking to me about his stepson is starting to get into has been like all into like hip hop and rap and like just so much garbage that's going on right now, and anything that Steve likes he's projecting. He's like, if I don't want to listen to any of that shit. So he said his son was listening to MF Doom the other day, and Steve was like, oh, this is terrible.
The old reverse psychology.
Like, God, please don't play it again.
That rules.
And that's real. That's real shit.
No shit, man.
You gotta have somebody make it cool for you to get it. I mean, somebody had to make it cool to me that I had this, history of my dad playing this stuff around me that made me, think, I should reconnect with, Tom Petty and Bob Dylan and Neil Young and
I mean,
John Prine.
it's a totally, it's a thing we've talked about, I think, many times on this podcast, sort of the, like, I don't know, the thankfully brief phase in like my teenage years of being like too punk for something that I used to love. And then, after a little while being like, what the fuck? This shit rules. Why would I pretend like I'm not listening to this,
Liking this and the other stuff I like makes me more unique, actually.
Exactly. And typically we need, I don't know, for at least for kids that were insecure like me, which is pretty much
All
everyone.
of us.
Like how liberating it is the first time somebody you look up to is like, yeah. Like I very much remember this dude in the late 90s, Jonathan, who's in a couple of bands in Memphis. I think he moved to Richmond later, so he wasn't like, I really only knew him when I was like a teenager, and then actually came across him a few times at shows and on Gunroom tours and stuff like that. But he was a hardcore kid through and through. He was punk as fuck. He made me tapes. He showed me a lot of things, and he loved Bruce Springsteen. And he was like the first, I was like, yeah, I love Bruce Springsteen too. And it was like my like, oh, that's cool. I can talk about this here. Great.
Yeah,
Like
this
I
is a
don't have
safe
to,
space.
we don't have to pretend that it's not good because it's popular or some shit like that. You know what I mean? So,
Because in the grand scheme of things, it's really not that popular. Not among like certain demographics of people. Like if Bruce Springsteen wasn't popular with my high school friends.
Oh, that's true. It's like popular on like a national scale, but that's like, 60-year-olds that go to the Bruce Springsteen show after, they take their boat out in the lake or whatever the fuck, So which by the makes it like one of my all-time favorite things is like how obsessed Chris Christie is with Bruce Springsteen, but Bruce Springsteen won't fuck with him at all. Like
Good.
he would always be like, so he'd be like, great show last night, Bruce, and thinking he had some juice because he was like the governor of New Jersey. And like Bruce completely ignoring him was almost better than him being like, man, fuck you.
Who are you? Oh,
So
that's awesome. All right, do you want to get
yeah,
into these songs?
let's get into the songs, man. And I think let's, you know, we can just mention which record, which of Justin's records each one is off of, which is Everything But the Closing Track. So he starts with I Don't Care, which is off of Justin's first record, Yuma. I
Which
don't.
I'd never heard until they recently did this reissue of it.
It, I had, but it wasn't the first thing. The first thing I heard was The Good Life. Like that was the
Same.
album. Yeah, that was the album that like got me into. So it seems like that was that way for a lot of people that got me into Justin and all that. So I definitely heard it later and still didn't care for it as much as I cared for the stuff that came later.
I think I feel the same, and that's why I think it's a pretty bold move to open off a song from his first record. Knowing like that was just definitely a choice to open with a song off his first record for the first song, because this isn't like chronological
Not at all,
on
right? So
this record.
he didn't have to do it this way.
Yeah, he didn't have to say, here, listen to one you've never heard before.
Right. 'Cause it's just clear, like I can appreciate the song for what it is, but like I don't think Justin had fully found his legs as a songwriter yet at this point.
Except that I think the lyrics in this song are like resonate the ethos that I believe he carried his whole life.
Fair. Yeah. I can see
Like,
that.
I think he really nailed himself lyrically with this, and I think that really, like, hearing Steve sing it, I was like, damn, like, because this was my first real exposure to this song, because Yuma hadn't been reissued yet, so it hadn't hit streaming or anything like that. So I think the only option I would have had to do this was be at one point I did have it on my Discogs want list, and it's like a $150 record, which I was just not going to pay
No.
that much, so I paid the $30 whenever it got reissued. But I'd never really gotten to listen to it, so I think maybe YouTube would have been the only option I had, and I just never took the time to do that. So there were other Justin records I hadn't dug into on the streaming yet, on the Spotify, that I need to go to YouTube.com for him yet. But yeah, definitely a bold move, I think, but
it
cool.
bold, but it works. It paid off,
Yeah.
I think. And then that goes into Ain't Glad I'm Leaving, which again, I'll say out of all of Justin's records, probably The Good Life and Harlem River Blues are the two that I've listened to the most. Meaning like that I've, you know,
Easily.
like, yeah. And it, again, I think I'm not unique in that regard. you know, we've talked about this because we do want to spend some time, especially since we're near the end of Steve's catalog, digging into a lot of other stuff, but JT's work as well. So we won't like, you know,
Harp on this
go
for too long.
har yeah, harp on it for too long, but these are the songs where I couldn't help but
Compare.
compare Steve's cover here to the original just because I know the original really well. Like I didn't have to go back and like listen to it. And I think the thing that struck me here, for all the similarities in how they approach lyrics and storytelling and all that stuff, Steve and JT have very different voices.
Very.
And I it so it's interesting just to see that contrast because it really sticks out on this too, on Ain't Glad I'm Leaving. As Steve's gotten older, his voice has gotten a lot more like loose and swagger. He like kind of he plays around with it a little bit more, you know, which sometimes I think works really well and sometimes I don't love. And that contrast with Justin, who's like he doesn't have a thick country accent. He's, you know, he kind of he's a pretty straightforward singer and his voice is a little bit buttoned up. And I don't mean buttoned up negatively. I mean, you know, that's just he owns his voice. He knows what he sounds like, and he's not trying to pretend to be something else. So that's what I'm stuck with is like it feels right for Steve to be playing this song, but it is just very different. The vocal approach is so different than the original.
I think even with the vocals being different, like he still nails like the attitude of the song correctly. And my bigger takeaway, other than just the fact that like one thing Steve doing these songs that he brings with him is Eleanor Whitmore for these songs to just elevate with the fiddle in so many ways. And I think all of the strings on this song do a really good job, but this is a on-brand song for Steve to sing.
Very much so.
Like, this almost feels like Justin wrote this song for his dad to sing once.
Yes, absolutely.
Like, this absolutely works on any Steve Earle record, honestly. This is the song about how he's a bad dude to get in a relationship with. He's not afraid of
I'm
commitment.
not afraid of commitment. I've been committed so many times.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. I fuck with it.
I love it. So the next track is Maria off of Nothing's Gonna Change the Way You Feel About Me Now.
This is the most different sounding song on the record, I think.
It's both very different sounding, and it's just like it's a deep cut. Like this is not a super popular JT song. But I feel like we don't know what was going on in Steve's head when he was doing the difficult work of deciding which songs he was going to cover on this album, but like this, it's in the spirit of so many of the sad breakup, broken heart songs that Steve's written over the years that I feel like if nothing else, similar to the at how he nailed the attitude on Ain't Glad I'm Leaving, there had to be something there.
I was curious too, because he has that like a little bit of an effect on his voice, and I was curious if you would hate this on this song.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
I don't hate it either. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
I think this has like a very like indie rock feel to it.
Yes.
It which is like we talked about this when we talked about Revolution Starts Now, I think, with the F the CC. I would like to see Steve write a proper rock record. Like a fast rock record, just as much as I would like to see Steve write an indie record at this point after hearing how he does Maria.
You know what? That's such a good point because it is it's like it's, it sounds like the Shins or like
Yes,
that. You know?
exactly. It's
Totally.
got that like very like bright, like kind of like big room indie sort of sound to it that I've just never heard Steve really do other than maybe when he does like some of those songs on like the this if it, I think it's Sidetracks, the songs with God, what were the guys who he did that split with?
Oh right. What was the name of that band?
I'm blanking on it right now. It's that's like the one that's not on streaming. I fucking bought it. It's in the other game room.
Super Suckers.
Super Suckers, yeah.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of similar to like, and even just like some of the regular songs on those Sidetracks records that like just don't obviously didn't fit with anything else.
Yeah.
Just write some other songs that fit with those songs. Let's see what you got.
I bet.
Or you're too old.
Yeah, I bet he totally could.
I bet he could.
It's just a matter of, yeah, he's at the point now where it's like, what do I want to do? But yeah, it's
Apparently, he wants to do 50 cities and 50.
50-50 better.
Fucking
Well, not
Christ.
not in 50 days. He's
Oh.
not. He's just over 50 cities to celebrate 50 years as
50
a
years, that's it.
songwriter. Yeah, this is not the, Dead Ramones, 28 shows, 28
28
days.
days.
But yeah, I agree. This is the most like different song on the record, but cool.
No, very.
Now we go back to The Good Life, Far Away in Another Town,
And
which.
we finally hit depressing Justin material.
Yeah. And I mean, again, this is like, I'm like so glad, but I mean, obviously, because it comes from a very sad place that he chose this. This is one of my favorite Justin songs. But, again, there's something about that theme. Hell, I'm gonna be lonesome anyway, so I might as well be lonesome somewhere else.
Yeah.
And also, again, to not, hit over the head about like what's different. I just appreciate that like Steve was not trying to imitate Justin, like as he does these songs. You know what I mean? It was just like I think you said it well. He like understands the spirit of it, but he's gonna do it like he does it.
Yeah, he takes it in for what it means to him too. 'Cause I'm also sure he heard, I'm sure I don't care. Ain't glad I'm leaving. And for what you're saying about Maria, like very similar to some of Steve's heartbreak songs, Far and Away Another Town. I'm sure like the same way when I listen to any Terror record, I feel like Scott Vogel's talking directly to me about a specific person that he knows this song is about in my life. I feel like Steve can read these lyrics and go, man, Justin was writing this to me.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, man.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty in some people's songwriting is that it can be so broadly specific that you hear it and you just know that feeling. I can't remember because I try to stay with these versions of these songs and take them in, but the original of this, does it have that organ in it as well?
I don't
It
think so.
doesn't. I think the organ's a great touch on this song.
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah, there's a lot of places where he added a lot more.
Take some liberties,
He
yeah.
both took liberties and a lot of Justin's stuff was pretty minimalist and or there'd be like guitar, fiddle, bass, and Steve would add to it. But again, it's like it works, especially in the context of how Steve sings the songs.
And him playing mandolin for this song, I think is really, really fucking works as well. And
Absolutely.
then we move on to, I believe we talked about this, your preferred John Henry song.
It's not my preferred
It
John
isn't your
Henry.
preferred John Henry
My
song?
preferred John Henry song is The Day John Henry Died by Drive-By Truckers.
That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
But we did talk about this one whenever we talked about
Yeah.
God, what was the song on Ghost that I can't remember the name of now?
Oh gosh.
John Henry was a steel driving man.
That's yeah.
Yeah, we do. There's
I
so
mean,
many songs.
there's a lot of John Henry
A lot of
songs.
John Henry songs. Yeah, I think the band comes alive with this song,
The band really comes alive, and I
which
mean,
helps after a downer of
does help after that downer, but all I could do, and I punished you with this picture, is think about like, obviously Steve's youngest son is named John Henry,
Yeah.
so Justin's half brother. And so like instead of focusing more on the song, I was thinking about like, well, yeah, maybe he had to pick this one because it's another John Henry song. It's about his, the namesake of his half brother. And I found this picture. And it's from, we've talked about it before, that Hardly Strictly Bluegrass Festival in San Francisco, that they do every year.
That's the one that the one good billionaire
Yeah,
started, right? Yeah.
exactly. That billionaire that loves Steve, and bluegrass music. So that still does that free festival in Golden Gate Park every summer, I think. And there is a it's just a heartbreaker of a picture because it's from 2017, so it's not like, ancient history. It's 3 years before Justin died. And it's Justin holding John Henry, huge smiles on their faces. Like they're clearly like messing with each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? John Henry, looks, he's probably about 9 or 10 in the picture, so he's a bigger boy, but he's still very much like a little kid. And Steve is standing a few feet away with just like the proudest papa look on his face. And it's just like, in the context, like before Justin passed, it was just like, what a sweet picture.
Yeah.
And now it's like, stab me in the
Devastating.
heart. Yeah. So I feel like listening to this song, which I agree, like glad they picked it up. This was where I was like, huh, let me Google. I think I had started to be like, I wonder if Justin had much of a
This is what
relationship with John
caused you
Henry.
to Google
Yeah,
that and
because
find a picture? Oh,
I was thinking
tragic.
about like, oh, both considering the age gap and the fact that they're half siblings and stuff like that. I was like, hey,
I wonder how much they saw each other.
right, how much they saw each other, was Justin kind of like an uncle to him, how that kind of thing can happen when there's that age gap. And I still do, it's none of my business, frankly, like what their relationship was like, but I saw that picture and it was just like, oh, it's clear that he like loved his little brother
Loved his
very
little brother,
much.
yeah.
Yeah. So, that's, not necessarily directly related to the song, but it is at the same time.
No, I hear you on that. It's funny too because Justin had to have written this song before he had a half brother named John Henry as well, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so amazing.
Maybe it was, I mean, clearly, there's a million John Henry
John
references
Henry songs,
everywhere,
yeah.
but
But it's just funny enough that he was like, I'm gonna write a John Henry song. And then now, well, I guess he no longer has to live with the fact that his brother's named that, but the world does.
Yeah.
I do really love how Steve like belts out on the song though. That was one of the things that stuck out to me because he really feels like he's like giving
Man,
it his all.
he really is. He really is. Yeah, it's great. I'm glad he did it. But
God, you want to move on to turn out my
yeah.
lights before you get too upset?
I mean, and speaking of, I mean, Turn Out My Lights is a heartbreaker. Another great song off of The Good Life.
This is the first one I don't have like a strongly positive feeling on the version of it.
I don't either, and you
It's
know,
just fine.
it's fine. And you know, a key element that I think it's missing for me on Justin's version, one of the stars is the harmonica. And you know, that's not, Steve didn't recreate that, which like that's probably a good choice to not just like imitate it verbatim, but I'm like, oh, I don't think the song hits me as hard without that accompaniment.
Yeah,
So,
the only, I mean, the only added thing here is, again, fiddle.
yeah, right. So, I mean, I got it. You got to use it.
Lone Pine Hill.
Lone Pine Hill. I mean, this is maybe the greatest song Justin ever wrote, in my opinion.
I think it's at least like in the running of it. I think there's a better song that he wrote, but my immediate thought of this, like not even seconds into it, was Steve had no shot in competing with his son's
No
version of
shot at
this.
competing, right?
Upping the tempo, though, was a good decision.
It suits Steve's voice a lot more that way. And I just like, this is, you know, it's again interesting, like what songs he chose and didn't. Out of a, you know, 13 years as an active artist, Justin had a pretty damn extensive catalog for that time. And you know, so whittling this down to 10 or so songs was no easy task, but this felt like one, like, oh, of course you got to do Lone Pine Hill. And
I
because, go
to
ahead.
call back to us talking about Obituary and their tempo changes, though, the tempo changes in this very HC.
Yeah,
The
I
way
agree.
it speeds up and then slows down and then picks back up, it's
Totally. And also just, it takes you, the lyrics follow that, right? When you get like, as it gets to the climax, where it's just like, at first, you know, it's just like, oh, this is any other, you know, almost as like, is this some kind of tribute to a Confederate soldier? But then it's like, it is, but not to glorify the Confederacy, to
Nah.
like highlight
Unfair this
how
was.
unfair this was, that how, you know, the people who were sent out to die for this never fucking owned anybody. I have a special relationship with this song too, because like, this is the one where I remember like my ears perking up and me being like, this is Steve Earle's son. Oh, cool. I'm gonna get this record. You know what I mean? Like, that was, I heard this. I feel like, dude, I mean, this dating me, this was what, 08 maybe? There was like an pre-podcast, like, you know, when there was internet radio sometimes, there was a country show I would listen to sometimes. And I was a teacher then too, so I'd be like miserable, like grading papers or something like that. And I would have this on. And I remember this was definitely the first Justin song I heard, because my ears perked up. I loved the song, I loved the lyrics. And then the person would be like, that was Justin Townes Earle. And me being like, oh shit, I got to get this record. That's Steve Earle's kid. So I'm glad he covered it. I'm also glad he adjusted the tempos for sure.
No, I think it definitely sets it aside. All right, on to Champagne Corolla, which I was reminded recently while talking to my mom about all the vehicles she had, that a Champagne Corolla is the one that she was in when she had her horrible accident
Oh no.
and landed herself in a coma in front of me.
Oh. Well.
So I don't like thinking about that,
Yeah.
but I do now.
Yeah, I mean, she is a middle class queen.
All facts. But yeah, a lot of great decisions all around on how to tackle this song, I think.
Yes, I love it. Like, this is, he gives it his swagger.
He puts his swag on Justin's swaggiest song easily.
Exactly. And I mean, and it's also cool. I feel like Steve's really leaning into this one, because sometimes lyrically Justin would approach things differently. This is one where I was like, Steve could have written these words. Like, when you're saying
Absolutely.
you can't trust a rich girl further than you can throw her,
I
like
wrote that lyric down because I think it's so cool.
yeah.
I also, one of my thoughts, like, listen to this a million times, and I don't want to pontificate on these things too much, but like, who knows if I would have this thought whenever we're finally covering the record this is on. We need the female version of this song about watching out for Andrew Tate types.
Dude, 100%.
I need that. I need like Margo Price. Well, I guess maybe Margo Price already did, and it's called Cocaine Cowboys.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, because what you need is a middle class king driving a beige Mercury Topaz.
Yeah, I was knew you were gonna go to the Mercury Topaz. I was waiting for it. I was waiting.
Which, by the way, for our listeners who weren't familiar with Mercury, it was a Ford derivative, the same as like Lincoln is, but it had really no reason for existing, right? Because Lincoln is like the fancy Ford, the luxury version. Mercury was like literally the same cars. So a Mercury Topaz is a Ford Escort.
Really? I don't think I ever knew that.
Yeah, it's like literally the same car.
That's pretty funny.
But it's just I had it under that label, but it's an Escort, which again, great car.
Okay. Well, I
Yeah.
learned something today. I've never, I honestly didn't know that Mercury was a subsidiary thing of Ford.
It was. And I don't know when they went out of business or whatever, but I could now looking at it, I could see why, because it was just like
Same ass car.
literally the same ass car, just with a different badge on it. So hell
Well,
yeah,
damn,
man.
no, all we need to do is talk about REM at some point and
Yeah, I don't know if I'm
we'll
gonna be
hit
able
your
to
points.
squeeze it in organically on this
Okay,
one, but
we'll find out.
we got some time.
Yo, okay, so we talked a little bit about this, and I think we'll repeat it at the end if somebody isn't paying attention or remembering, but next episode, possibly talking about Yuma and the Saint of Lost Causes as a double feature,
Yeah,
Justin's first and last record.
there's a bookend.
I gave the Saint of Lost Causes the couple glances, and it was fine for me. I want to say it came out around a time where like this music just wasn't grabbing me the same way it was when I first started listening to it. And when I saw Steve play this song live with the Dukes, I was like, all right, this is way better than I had originally appraised it as. I need to revisit this shit. And now I really fuck with it. But Steve's version of this and was kind of what got me to like actually get back to like studying this rather than just kind of brushing it off. Like it's not exciting me at the moment.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Dude, I fucking love that.
Yeah.
I'm
Thanks, Steve.
similar in that. Yeah, I've not heard
Thanks, Steve. I
Steve.
hate that you had to do this.
Yeah, no shit, man. I had not heard I've not heard Steve do this song live, but I think similarly, when this record came out in 2019, I gave it some cursory listens, but it didn't grab me the way that a Good Life or Harlem River Blues grabbed me. So hearing Steve do this cover and really liking it has made me want to go back and give a more thorough listen to the whole JT record.
Yeah, because I'll even say, like, listening to this recorded, even, I prefer it when I saw it live over even listening to the recording. I think that live, it really, like, he's able, when I saw him at least, to come forward with the lyrics at times and then kind of hang back at times
Yeah.
and like put more emphasis on certain things in that live setting that like really like it like perked my ears up in a way that like on recording that just never did. And
Yeah.
I do like think like lyrically, a lot of this song is like some shit Steve would write.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like
I totally agree.
it's very clear, like you were saying, like their approaches to songwriting, like and lyrics especially, like are very interchangeable, considering these two men had like pretty different lives
Yeah.
coming to similar conclusions
I was
about
about to
things
say
at times.
they got into some very similar shit, even though they had,
Different routes to get there.
exactly. Right
The
on.
last verse on this song always hits the hardest, though.
Oh, it hits real hard, man. I mean, we're at a point now too, from the swagger of Champagne Corolla, which is great. The last three here are just like, I'm gonna start punching you in the gut and we'll continue punching you until we're done. And that's how I feel about Saint of Lost Causes all the way through.
I also notice now that we're moving on, getting towards the end of this. You have not accused me of any favorite song.
I haven't, man. Shit.
And I haven't accused you either.
I didn't think about it at this. It might have been just because our
There's no favorite of this. There's no
it's
happy.
hard to
There's
pick a
no.
favorite. It,
I think my favorite is Harlem River Blues.
dude, mine is a it's a toss up between this and Lone Pine
Lone
Hill,
Pine
but I
Hill.
think
That's what I
I
was thinking when you were talking about how much you like Lone Pine Hill. Well, then that's the thing is it this version of Lone Pine Hill? Do you like it more than this version of Harlem River Blues?
no. But and I give Harlem River Blues the edge here because you know what? This version of Harlem River Blues is a memorial. Like it
Yes.
feels like, and it's special. I mean, everybody's there.
It's how it
And
feels when you hear him play it live, too.
yeah, like it's, like literally everybody's there. Fucking, Jason Isbell and Amanda Shires are singing on this, are, in the background vocals. And so it's like, it feels like celebration and mourning at the same time, which is what a memorial, a tribute to someone's life should be. I love this version. I mean, it's just wild too. I mean, it's a song about, it's a tongue-in-cheek song about killing yourself. You know what I mean? But like, in a like celebratory hand clap, I'm free kind of
Yes.
way. And
It's a gospel song.
it's a gospel song. And I think Steve's choices here and the way he, dude, Amanda Shires tearing it up on the fiddle. Everybody in the background just makes it what it is. And which, by the way, like that's the other thing. I didn't realize until years later after loving the record that that's Amanda Shires with him on the cover of The Good Life.
Oh, really? I don't think I've ever noticed that either.
Well, have you, there, all the album covers, I think up to Saint of Lost Causes, it's like Justin and a different woman are
Yes.
like in the photographs. And so Amanda Shires is who's with him there on the
That's
cover of The
amazing.
Good
I've
Life.
literally never noticed that before.
That was what I didn't want to dig through and find it, but that's was one of the things I wanted to highlight by pulling out my copy of that record. I'll say this though, like, and it, 'cause it fits in. We've talked about this song before on the podcast. I think if there was some
Yes,
arbitrary
we have. And
mention.
oh my God, that is totally her. You can tell it's her.
Some arbitrary mention of the FDR drive, because every time the route between where I live and my in-laws' house, we take the FDR, and right along the Harlem River. And I think about this and I think about I feel so much kinship with both Justin and Steve, because there's this like Southern boy in New York City kind of thing
Yeah.
that we all have. And that's something that I think that's really special too, is Harlem River Blues, not just the song, but I think the record, it's almost like that's a shared thing that Justin and Steve had, because it's like it's Justin's New York record,
Yeah.
basically. Like not every song is about New York, but there are several. Dude, I mean, we'll talk about it at some point, but the Working for the MTA,
It's a great
that
song.
great song. And now I ever, anytime I see Pelham Bay, I hear Pelham Bay, like the way that Justin sings it. Like I run the 6 line train from Brooklyn Bridge to Pelham Bay. I used to take the 6 train quite a bit for work. I don't anymore. I don't have a job. But anyway, it's like it's so there's like a deep connection there. And I think what I'd come down to, I'm rambling now, is it really feels like, fuck, it feels like this is what they could sing at Justin's wake, and there like
Oh,
couldn't be a
dude,
more
I mean,
perfect tribute. And like you said, he Steve, this is a regular feature of his live sets
yeah,
now.
and I mean, this is like to me, this is the last song on this record, and Last Words is a bonus track. To go out on the best song he wrote, I think, as far as the best, this is the best song. Like he wrote a song that is every bit of it. There's no wasted time. There's no fat on this song.
It's perfect.
It is all meat. And this song, I think that, like you're saying, this is a memorial. This is his legacy. I think is
Yeah.
this song will be played in 100 years.
Absolutely.
If people still have guitars in 100 years, someone will be singing this song. Like,
Absolutely.
there's just no way around it. It is a, and we'll talk about when we talk about the record, but man, it's a great version that Steve does, and incredibly intelligent to hold it off to the end.
Incredibly intelligent. And to your point about it being a perfect song, like no extra fat, nothing not necessary, like it is so difficult to write a perfect sing-along chorus. And this song has a perfect sing-along chorus. You know
That
what
you
I
can do
mean?
in circles.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can just go in circles forever. You can go on playing this song for a while if you wanted to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's good. All
But
right,
I
you
agree
want
with
to
you.
get a what?
I agree with you too on the like last words is critical, man. But God, like I feel like again, this is for Steve. I think one
This
of
is a
the
punch, dude.
it's a punch, and it almost feels like I have literally never made it through a full listen to this song without choking up.
Same.
Never. The grief is unimaginable to me. And so I find it very unpleasant. You know what I mean? For that
Yeah.
reason. Like I
Yeah, no,
if
it feels bad. It
yeah,
feels
it
bad.
feels bad. I'm so glad it's there, but like this is between Steve and Justin, man. And like
Yeah, no, it's very beautiful. The first thing I wrote on this was this song makes me feel the most, but I don't like the feeling.
dude, very well said. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I when we were the other day when we were supposed to record, I was doing my listen through that day to prepare, and my note I wrote that day was I cried listening to this at work today.
Yeah.
I'm just stuck in chicken and just
I know. Like
like
hope nobody comes
raining.
up to you while you're
Yeah,
yeah,
straining. If
exactly.
someone says something to me right now, they're gonna think I'm having a nervous breakdown. But yeah, no, it's this is like, I don't know, it's so sad. This also like one of the things this made me think of today when I was listening to it was the Sturgill Simpson record that we talked with Tom about, and how that was a record that he wrote for his son if he's ever not around anymore.
Yeah, if he's ever if dad's never around anymore. Yeah.
And that this song is him talking to his son who's not around anymore.
Fuck. Yeah.
And Justin will never get to hear it.
Yeah. It's brutal, and I think there's something there too about I didn't really want to talk about it, but here we are. Like, I wonder if it makes it better or worse that he fucking talked to him a few hours before. You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
I like it. It's just such a double-edged sword. Like, on the one hand, you're grateful that like you got this last, I love you, but on the other hand, you were like, I was just talking to you. What, and it. There's,
I mean, addiction's crazy, man.
addiction's
Like
crazy.
that's the
And
thing is, and that's the thing when you talk to somebody and you feel like there's what could I have done different to like make you like to help you get through. It's like no, it's nothing you
yeah,
could have done
there's
different.
nothing, not even a father, not even a best friend. Like, so yeah, it's a
Like
it's
that work had to start well before that day for that situation to change.
yeah. Whew. So,
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's really
if
tough.
as I go back to Steve's versions of some of these songs, like I'm this, it's interesting when I'll randomly put on one of my like Spotify fucking AI curated playlists or whatever, if I just want to mix, it will play me both versions of Harlem River
Really?
Blues. Yeah, sometimes I'll get Justin, sometimes I'll get Steve's, and I'm happy with either one. But if it ever plays Last Words to me, I'm gonna fucking
Skip.
throw it out the
Fuck you.
window.
Fuck
Yeah.
you. I'll never listen to this song against my will.
And seriously, man. Yeah,
This
it's assault.
will always be for reasons, Or or intentional, because there's no way you casually just let
No,
this
man.
song happen to you.
Well,
Fucked up.
folks, there it is, JT, a Steve Earle record and a Justin Townes Earle record at the same time. We're going to spend more time talking about Justin. We've alluded to it, but if you are someone, and there's still a lot of folks out there, no shame in it, who love Steve and are deep into Steve's music, but haven't really listened to a lot of Justin Townes Earle. Maybe starting with some of these songs could be a good intro and get you to
For
want
sure.
to check out some of Justin's records. And just like to the points we made earlier, both how brilliant he was as a songwriter, but also as a virtuoso guitar
Yes,
player.
that's what I was about to say. I was about to say, because Virtuoso, every one of his records has a different feel,
Exactly.
a different vibe. Like Good Life is so Hank. Harlem River Blues is really Springsteen to me.
Very Springsteen.
Like he's all over the place on what he was able to accomplish, which each one of each one of his albums feels like a project on its own. It feels like he had a vision for it. And I think every one of them is executed so well and
So
so
well.
brave too.
So well, so brave. And to that point, that like how much of a vision it feels like there was, and how cohesive and project based they are. This used to be a common thing with some artists, but like, yo, 7 LPs in 13 years, in addition to EPs, other releases, and
Nobody
things
does
like that.
music like that
He
now.
was incredibly prolific for modern standards. Yeah, no, nobody puts out music at that clip, or at least whole records like that at that clip. And so that's just another thing to like, it's I was thinking about it, man, and like, this is all just, there's no way of knowing, but it's almost like there was something
He knew
inside of
he
him that,
had a he knew he had to get it in.
he was on the clock, man. You know what I mean? Like, you look back on it now and you're like, what other reason could there be for this young man, like who didn't even live to 40? He something was burning inside of him that had him creating at that insane of
That
a
rate,
clip.
yeah.
And it's pretty incredible. So, Tyler, what are we doing next time?
We're going to talk about Yuma, and we're going to talk about the Saint of Lost Causes in their entirety and bash these records together and talk about where Justin starts and where Justin ends. And maybe at some point we'll fill in the space between.
Absolutely. I think that's a great plan. Well, as always, friends, thank you for listening. We appreciate you. Take care of yourselves and one another. Peace.